Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
And one of the food allergy hypotheses are, and you learned this when you went through to be a master trainer, is the exposure theory, right? Mm-hmm. Our food supply, what are we exposing our food supply, and is it poisoning our bodies? And so much of the data is saying, yes, we are poisoning our bodies. We are creating this ourselves, and we need to stop. There's a lot that needs to be done, but I really do believe it has to start on the ground. And you have to get to people's pain points. And what's the pain point for an organization? Profit, bottom line, shareholders. Mm-hmm. And if you start affecting that and you stop eating at restaurants that are poisoning you, and you start eating at restaurants that are taking your health into consideration, there's going to be a shift. Been an invisible disease for so long, and people don't talk about it because they don't want to be ostracized and they don't want to be looked at as that person. Mm-hmm. Because if you're in a wheelchair, you can't hide that, right? People will put in a ramp for you if you have a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. It's a disability. We have to be mindful of that. This isn't something that can be helped. You can't, you know, if you have green eyes and you want brown eyes, you can pop in different color contacts. But if you've got a food allergy, you have a food allergy. And if, as an adult, that food allergy isn't going away. Celiac isn't going away.
Hey, you guys, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. I have the pleasure of sharing with you a conversation that I had with Dee Dee Ficino. She is the head of Aller Cuisine. And as you might imagine, it has to do with food allergies. And she has done some amazing work with helping people navigate their food allergies in their homes, etc. But she is really going outside and beyond that, working with corporations, businesses, schools, hospitals, to not only work with the people that they serve, but really to help the people inside that company, the employees who have food allergies and food issues that need to be recognized. She is going to share about that. But as you can hear from the little snippets at the top, we talked about various other things, about our food system and what's going on with our food and how do we navigate that as people perhaps who don't have food allergies or sensitivities. But maybe hearing things about how people have different experiences and different laws in Europe, and how does that affect us here in our bodies here in the United States? One of my favorite things that she says that you'll hear in our conversation is basically it's reasonable to say, if I'm paying you for food, your food should not poison me. So I think that's a pretty reasonable request. And of course, she's going to share some great information and awareness around food allergies, celiac disease, and other things that might be going on in our bodies causing us issues. So how did I get to know Dee Dee? Well, you may recall that on the podcast, we had Betsy Craig, who is the CEO of MenuTrinfo. MenuTrinfo does allergy training, AllerTrain, which is the training that I do and I'm a master trainer for. Dee Dee used to be my go-to gal for everything that I needed at AllerTrain. She left us, sadly, to pursue a wonderful direction, which we are going to hear about today. So I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did having it. Before we dive in, I want to say a couple things. First of all, I wanted to mention the Teal Pumpkin Project. If you are out and about on Halloween and you see a house that has a teal pumpkin outside, basically that's indicating that they have non-food options for kids with food allergies and food sensitivities that may need to have something else besides candy given to them. So basically the teal pumpkin indicates a safe and aware house. And I know there is also a purple pumpkin project for epilepsy, and that's something that I honestly don't know very much about at all. I just wanted to bring awareness to that in case it's something that you want to partake in or you see and you're curious about. And a little housekeeping note, we did have some internet connection issues going on, and I think I got it all cleaned up, but if you hear some weird stuff going on, that is what's happening there. Sometimes hardwiring still doesn't solve a problem. That being said, I think you will hear everything pretty much just fine. A huge and heartfelt heartfelt thank you to all of you who have supported the podcast by sharing the podcast word of mouth or through Facebook, whether you're sharing it on your page or sending specific episodes to people that you think might be interested. So appreciate that. Thank you so much. And think about that with this episode. You know somebody who maybe they have food allergies, or maybe they run a business, or you know that they're challenged with their food allergies. The training that Dee Dee does, that I do, we may be able to support that person in their environment. And we would love, 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 love to do that so much. Thank you also so much to those of you who are our Patreon supporters and part of the Patreon community. You definitely have a very special place in our hearts. And I want to thank Dana, the newest person to Patreon. Thank you so very much for your wonderful support and your kind words that came with your gift and your joining of Patreon as well. Thank you so much. I really value your guys' feedback as well. You guys, the listeners, I want to hear what you want. I want to hear what you love. I want to hear what you love listening to or what you're not hearing and that you'd like to. So please feel free, send an email, get a hold of me through Facebook. All of those things are great. Post comments on the Facebook postings as well. Get the community talking. Share your thoughts, your experiences. Really, really value that. So please, if you're listening to this and you have an employer or a place that you have had a great experience with when it comes to your allergies or food sensitivities, go back to that Facebook post and post it below. We want to hear that. There are people here that need to know who they can count on, where people have had great experiences. So please do speak up and share. And of course, you can also share on the podcast page below the notes as well on wellnessrenpodcast.com. Or of course, you can find all the rest of the episodes, join the emailing list, and become a supporting part of our community through Patreon. We would love to have you. So check it out, see what goodies you get as well. All right, without further ado, let's get into our conversation with Dee Dee. Dee Dee, thank you. I am so excited to talk to you and share with everybody the work that you're doing because I think it's really important and needed. First of all, just to tell everybody how I met you before you dive into the work you're doing with Aller Cuisine.
Absolutely.
Yes. Many people who listen to the podcast or know me know that I do food allergy training for restaurants and have done that for quite a while and love it and love the company that I've worked with. And I met you through that company in my being a master trainer and you working with them as well and heading up that whole gig.
Yeah, that was fun. So I was the director of education and training for AllerTrain for a bit and had the great, great honor of meeting you. And Judy, what you all listeners don't know, and maybe you do know, she is funny, 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 but she is so dedicated and so passionate. And the days she would call in, like, we're just the happy, you just made my day so happy because it was just fun and we would laugh and she would have an issue and not sure what to do about it. And we would talk it through and we would figure it out, but it was never like this heavy, serious thing. It was just fun. Whenever Judy called, it was fun. And the whole office would hear me laughing and then they would all laugh and it just lightened the whole mood of our office when you called. So it was just so wonderful interacting with you on a regular basis. It was great.
Well, you know, and I think that speaks well to you as well as the company because you also are a blast to talk to and helpful, and not to mention the company being a great place to call into, and it's the atmosphere and that came through with you too. So it's so fantastic.
Well, thank you. And I will say, you know, Betsy, she does a great job hiring. I'm not tooting my own horn, but the woman who followed me, Kimberly Fields, who took over for me when I left, incredible, amazing girl. She's wonderful. I didn't have the opportunity to meet the people that preceded me, but I assume that they were the same. You know, when you're working with master trainers every day and you're kind of on the ground running with this, and then you're doing virtual training, because that's what I did. I trained all of the master trainers, but then I did virtual trainings with camps and restaurants and universities, and I did some in-person trainings here in town. And it's always, it's just a great atmosphere and everybody's in it for the right reason. Everybody's in it to help other people. So it really was, it was a fun job. I really, really enjoyed that portion of my life.
Awesome. And I went out there
to Fort Collins to actually do my training. And that was, I think, also.
Right. You got trained back in the old days.
I did. I know. And it was so, yeah. it was one of those things where you walk in and you feel that everybody is there for the right reasons, right? Like you're not just walking to this company that does this allergy training thing. It's you walk into a family that is dedicated to the work that they're doing. And it is about getting the job done. But it's also about being in a great environment. And Betsy is awesome. And we had her on the podcast too. I love that you have taken this and, you know, run in a direction that you saw a need for with Aller Cuisine. I think that's fantastic. So talk about your company, which is Aller Cuisine, which is different. It's different than what we think of when it comes to food allergy training. You know, we think of food allergy training and the specifics of what are you doing in the restaurant behind the scenes or making sure that people know to use different knives or whatever the case might be. But you have taken this in a different and very needed direction.
When I left Aller Cuisine, when I left Aller Train, I really wasn't sure what I was doing. I missed work. I was a teacher and an assistant principal in a previous life, and I worked with kids with celiac disease and diabetes and food allergies, the gamut. We had 1,500 kids in our school, so you can imagine the issues that we had to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of missed that hustle and bustle. I missed working with families. I missed working with children, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I left the company. I love to cook. And I said, you know, I could do the cooking thing. I could help families that way and come up with recipes and fun things like that. And so that's where cuisine came in. Aller Cuisine was actually cooking for your family with food allergies so that you could make one meal that made everybody happy and you didn't have to make 15 meals for 15 kids or worry about anything. As I got into that and I started talking to families and I started talking to teachers and I started talking to administrators, it became very clear to me that there was a huge lack of information in schools. There was a huge lack of information in hospitals. There was a huge lack of information in just business organizations and structures on how to accommodate staff and students in the case of schools and patients with food allergies. I was hearing stories about people being admitted to the hospital with food allergies and that documentation somehow getting missed between admissions and diet orders. So food was being served to these patients that could kill them. And in one of the stories, one of the nurses told me, one of her patients went into anaphylaxis because the steam from a shrimp put this patient in extreme danger. They had a shellfish allergy and they never ate the food. But when the top was removed from the food, they inhaled the steam and went into anaphylactic shock and were sent to the ICU. And I asked what happened to the patient and she didn't know. So I don't know if that patient survived or didn't survive. Mm-hmm. And hearing stories like that and stories about people that were in the workplace who felt like they couldn't attend company functions, they couldn't attend parties, they couldn't attend buffets, they couldn't attend celebrations because there was always food there that they couldn't have and they were embarrassed. They didn't want to say anything. They didn't want to speak up. I mean, we had teachers when I was teaching that I had one teacher who was so allergic to strawberries. If there was a strawberry in the building, she couldn't be in the building. I went on the floor, on our floor. Uh-huh. Another one, mushroom, same thing. If there was a mushroom anywhere, she would just get really, really sick. So I took the focus away from cooking. We're still cooking. We're still cooking. We're still cooking. But providing education. So it's more of an educational training. It's not a food service training. It's training, it's creating policies and procedures so that people can be accommodated in the workplace, whether they're in schools, whether they're in hospitals or in business organizations. And I think we misunderstand as a population how serious this is. I mean, there are 250 million people in the world who have food allergies. 37 million Americans. And if you Google it, you'll see the number 32 million. It was 32 million a few years ago. Absolutely true. Now it's 32 million adults in the United States with food allergies. One in 13 kids. And when you look at the total population of children from 0 to 18, you're talking about 5 million, at least 5 million kids. So that puts our number in the United States alone at 37 million. And when you add in IBS, when you add in celiac disease, when you add in food intolerances, when you add in sensitivities and all of these other issues, you're talking about 25% of the American workforce is affected by food allergies, celiac disease, and other dietary issues, which is a huge number. And if we don't start accommodating these people, we're going to lose 25% of our productivity in this country.
Wow. It is amazing when you think about the numbers. And we, you know, it's interesting because I hear sometimes the exhaustion from people who are trying to plan food or bring food or whatever. And the statement of, oh my gosh, you know, everybody has an issue with food or sensitivity or something they're not eating, but then we don't really want to accommodate, you know, and right. I hear that in restaurants and I hear that from people, you know, trying to plan things. And it's like, so what do we do? Because obviously, yeah, it is many people, and we're not just talking about people who have chosen not to eat something that they can maybe stay away from. But at the same time, why not respect that too when somebody's trying to figure out their diet? I know that was a lot of pushback I got sometimes with gluten-free when it became kind of a thing. It's like, well, but does that person really need it? And it's kind of like, well, but we don't know. That's why they're trying to have as clean of a diet as they can from it so they can determine right. how they
and
feel.
When you're talking about gluten, you're talking 16 between, and the number, I mean, the gap is huge, between 16 and 32 million people in the United States with a gluten intolerance, adults. Mm-hmm. Adults.
Right.
That's crazy.
That's a lot
and
of people, yeah.
97% of people with celiac disease are undiagnosed. So our numbers are deflated. They're really not realistic at all.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I think if you think about it, I think you have to, and this is where the mind shift comes into play. If we stop thinking about what we can't have, and when we start thinking about what we can have and how we can accommodate and what is the payoff for that, what is the payoff for accommodating in the restaurant industry? What is the payoff for accommodating people with food allergies or gluten issues? Well, the payoff is people spend more money mm-hmm. on food that is safe for them. So you're going to increase your profits by accommodating these people, and you're going to create a base of return customers they're going to continue to come to your establishment because they know you're going to take care of them and they're going to be safe there. There's a learning curve. Obviously, there's a learning curve. There might be a little inconvenience until you get used to new processes and procedures in the kitchen and in the front of the house. But the payoff is huge. And it's the same thing in the grocery stores. Once the grocery store started to understand how much people paid for free from products, that grocery cart was much more expensive than people who were not paying for free from products. And once they understood that math, and yeah, they're doing, this is a profit thing, it's profit. Mm-hmm. But their profits are going up by providing the kind of food products that people need to be safe. It is a sad, sad reason, but at the same time, it's great for people who have special dietary issues, who really do need those free from products. It's really important. And when you talk to employers and you talk to school administrators about the increase in productivity that they're going to have in the workforce when they start to accommodate, about how many teachers and how many associates and how many hospital personnel are not going to leave. They're going to stay. So they're going to reduce their training costs. They're going to increase retention. They're going to increase satisfaction, which automatically increases productivity. So your profit margin goes up. Your bottom line increases. And the number of claims that you have, medical claims, goes down. 51% of anaphylactic medical claims by adults occur in the workforce.
Wow.
51%, over half. So it's really, really important that we're accommodating in so many ways. And once they kind of get that, like, oh, if I take care of my employees, they already know if they take care of their employees, they're going to be happier. But the food just seems kind of frivolous. But once they get it, once their brain clicks around it, it's like, yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because you're mentioning, you know, workplaces and productivity. The people who sort of are the overseers of that have that investment. And I think about that in schools as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that I think when administration can think about that and how it benefits. I knew people when I was at college, once they figured out that they had celiac or they had a dairy sensitivity, it was like, oh my gosh, I'm spending so much less time sick in the bathroom, not studying, and my brain is working better and I feel better. And when we're thinking about school and these are young minds that are mm-hmm. are going forward into the world and need to learn. And if we can accommodate, and I know I see so many more schools doing some great, great things. So it's good that many people are catching on to that. And I know I talked to a a dietitian at a college years ago when I was at school, and she had really got it. She basically was like, no, our job here is to have our students do the best experience. And so we want to make sure that we have food that accommodates their food needs and that it's easy for them to get. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cost them more money because they're already dealing with stuff, you know? And I think that's, right. It's an interesting challenge. Like you say, the profitability of it. And I know that's one of the hardest things for many people who have allergies and celiac and sensitivities is the extra cost on the user end of it. You know, trying to operate in a world where those, they feel like that's being taken advantage of a little bit.
Right. And I think, I like to think that the manufacturers of the free from foods are doing the best they can with price controls. Most of the companies that I have talked to started out of a need from their own personal homes. You know, they had a loved one with food allergies. And so they created this and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger, which is awesome. That's the American dream. Mm-hmm. But to get those ingredients is costly. You know, when you're talking about cooking with guar gum or alternative flours, they're not inexpensive. They are more expensive. So the price, it does go up. However, if we think about things in terms of, okay, now I know, I didn't know I had celiac before and I was eating all of this stuff that I shouldn't be eating, right? Now I have to focus my diet and this is where I'm going to focus. And these items, they are more expensive. However, you're not buying Cheetos anymore. You're not buying Doritos anymore. there are a lot of things you're not buying anymore.
Right.
And you're limited in what you're buying because of the ingredients. So hopefully it isn't too much more that you're spending. Certainly you're spending more per item, but if you're not buying those other items, it kind of makes up the difference. I know my fiance and I, we're in the middle of the Whole30. We're actually in our last week of the Whole30.
Oh, fun.
And he came home the other day. He goes, yeah, it actually has been great. And I'll tell you another story about that in a minute, but back to the cost, because we're buying all, you know, real fruits, real vegetables, real food. It's all real. It's all whole. There's nothing processed in our diet. Yes. As a matter of fact, I do. I said, but how much were you spending on fast food before we started this? And he did the math. And I said, and how much were you spending on beer? And he did the math. And how much were we spending going out to eat? He did the math. How much were you spending on vodka? Did the math. And I said, okay, are you spending more or are you spending less? He goes, oh God, I'm spending a lot less. He said, yeah, you are.
right. So, yeah. No.
Yes, we're spending more on food, but we're not spending more on incidentals, you know? So there is a trade-off there. And we had people over the other night and made all of this food, hors d'oeuvres and the big dinner and everything. And I had wine for them. We didn't drink wine, but they did. But they loved everything that we served, and everything we served was whole and free from a lot of the top allergens, because just by nature of Whole30, you wipe out a lot of those foods.
Right. Another piece of that I think is interesting when it comes to the cost, because this comes up as a question all the time, is why does this stuff cost more? And, you know, part of it is just supply and demand is a definite piece of it. And but another piece is also, you know, when we think of wheat, corn, and soy, those are products that the government pays partially for. Mm-hmm. They're subsidized. So we're already eating food that somebody else is paying partially for. And this, you know, almond flour, all of these other things are not paid by somebody else. We're paying the whole cost.
Exactly right. Yeah. And again, it comes to the trade-off. What are you not buying? So you're not spending money here where you were spending, but now you're spending money here and your food budget is going to go up. I'm not saying it's not going to go up, but we really need to be careful when we think about how much it's actually going up. And what are you saving in the long run? I mean, how many trips to the doctor are you saving? How?
Yes. It is. And if you can find those perspectives.
How many co-pays are you saving?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You have to wrap your head around the whole picture. It's not just the grocery cart. It's everything. It's everything.
Yeah. And for some people, I talked to a guy years ago who spent so much time in the emergency room and he had transfusions, all this stuff. And once he discovered he had celiac disease, and he's like, oh my gosh, all I have to do is not eat wheat. You know, he's like, I've already cooked my food anyway. He's like, for him, he was like, this is just not that big of a deal. And it was like, to hear him say that was just so fascinating.
But what a weight to be lifted off of someone's shoulders. Like, you think you're going to die. You can't understand what's wrong with you. Then you finally found out. And you're like, oh my God, This is amazing. And then you start hearing your friends talk about their ailments, which kind of sound like your ailments. And you say, hey, have you been tested for celiac or gluten? Maybe you should go get tested. And then they get tested. And sure enough, I had a friend of mine whose son, 13 documented food allergies. By the way, he had none. We just found out. He's lived his whole life with quote unquote food allergies. It was the oral allergy syndrome, pollens, not food allergies.
Oh.
But anyway, she was talking to me about her daughter and her daughter's issues. And I said, you know, it sounds like celiac to me, or that she's got a severe gluten intolerance. They did not get tested. She did remove gluten from her diet and she's doing great. She's doing great.
Wow.
Yeah. So testing is so important because this boy tested positive for all of these things and has lived a life since he was like 6 years old of not being able to participate in different activities and parties and going to restaurants and not being able to order, 13 food allergies.
Right.
And it was pollens.
Wow. And yeah. How did they figure that out? That's a different test, right?
It's just kind of come into the fore. People didn't really know a lot about it many years ago. I know Dr. Ruchi Gupta talks about it a lot, but she's only been talking about it for a few years also. I read about it. I did one of my Facebook lives, was focused on this. I said, hey, my food allergy may not be a food allergy. And mothers lost their minds. Like, they wanted to kill me. They were so mad that I was questioning their food allergy. And I said, I'm not questioning your food allergy. What I'm saying is that there are other reasons that this could have tested positive, and what a blessing it would be if you found out you could actually eat these foods. Now, for milk allergy, obviously pollens don't have a lot to do with milk allergy. Mm-hmm. But for other allergies, tree nut allergies, fruit allergies, so many nightshade allergies, pollens do impact deeper than we realize. And a new study just came out just in the last couple of weeks, I believe, about leaky gut. And how people are being diagnosed with food allergies who they don't really have food allergies, but their body reacts as though they have a food allergy because all of these toxins are entering their body through their leaky gut. And if we fix the gut, then the food allergy goes away. Now, this is a hypothesis. I think it's a theory. I don't know that it's proven or not, but they're working on it. And there's a lot of research to back this up. Mm-hmm. So it's just really, really interesting. The more we take care of our bodies, the more we're mindful about what we're putting in, the fewer issues we're going to be. And one of the food allergy hypotheses are, and you learned this when you went through to be a master trainer, is the exposure theory, right? Mm-hmm. Our food supply, what are we exposing our food supply? And is it poisoning our bodies? And so much of the data is saying, yes, we are poisoning our bodies. We are creating this ourselves and we need to stop.
Right. Yeah. And won't that be an interesting thing if we can figure it out and we can clean things up?
And I think if we start to hold our food manufacturers accountable, we start putting in their food that bodies because it's easy, it's convenient, and it's fast, we're going to see a revolution. And I think that's really important. And I would love nothing more than to be put out of business because people are healthy.
Right.
Maybe that'd be the greatest way to be put out of business. Oh my gosh, I'm out of business because people are healthy.
Let
me find something else to focus on. That would be awesome.
Exactly. How exciting would that? I know it is. It is that desire that so many of us want. It's why we work so hard to figure this out and to share information with people, because it's like, no, the real answer is we want you to have an answer for you. But I think about it for myself. It's also having more of us understand the challenge so that you're right, so that we can hold the food manufacturers accountable. So we can say to these people, no, it's not okay that you're doing this to us. You know, I think of how many things in the US we're allowed to eat that we're not allowed to eat in Europe.
Oh, they won't take our food over there.
Right, exactly. And yeah. And how?
Yeah, go ahead. No,
I was just going to say, how do we call that freedom? You know, we say, well, we've got it so good over here. I don't know. Slowly being poisoned is not having it so great. It's just because we're not being killed, you know, in 5 minutes, but we're being hurt over time, that doesn't make it better. It just makes it different.
It does. And then, you tie that into our whole medical system, and you tie that into pharmaceuticals, and you tie in.
Yes.
And there's a lot of money riding on sick Americans. I think we need to take that money and put it into healthy Americans. And I think our country would would thrive. I'm going to put a little pitch out there though. I did start a Facebook group. It's called Food Allergy Ambassadors. And for you, Judy Brewer, and for everybody else who's listening, who is in the food allergy or celiac or dietitian, if you're a professional in this industry, it's kind of a think tank where we're coming together and trying to brainstorm, like we're doing right now, solutions and the ways we can positively impact this issue of food. And if you would like to join, if you just go into Facebook and put Food Allergy Ambassadors, it is a private group, so I have to vet you, but I'll absolutely let you in. And I would love the more people, the more brains, the more people in this industry. I think if we can get together around a table and talk, we can come up with some really incredible ideas on how to tackle, how to focus, where to start. Because the medical community is doing a great job with medical research, and I am not a medical researcher. I don't want any part of that, but I can spread the word. You know, I have other skills. We all have skills that we bring to the table. So I'm really, really excited about that. So if any of you listeners out there want to be a part of that, please, please, please join that group.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to circle back to something.
Yes, ma'am.
Because I think this is something that people hear and they go, whoa, wait, what is the 97% undiagnosed celiac? I have a pretty good understanding of where that comes from, but that's a really high number. So do you want to talk about a little bit about how that's even possible?
Well, okay, let me start by saying this. I'm not saying that 97% of the U.S. population has celiac is undiagnosed. What I'm saying, and I'm not saying it, the medical professionals are saying that, I'm just the talking head spewing the information, is that of the people who have celiac, 97% of them are undiagnosed. So right now we know there are 3 million Americans with celiac disease, right? Mm-hmm. We know that. But we don't know how many others are out there, because of the people with celiac disease that are out there, they're undiagnosed. It's this, like if you have a cold and you don't go to the doctor, you're not they don't know you have a cold.
Right.
Unless you go to the doctor, you're undiagnosed. So that's where that number comes from. Now, I don't know where they're getting that number from, but I do respect the profession and I respect the number. And it's probably coming from the people who are coming in and the increases that they are seeing and the number of people who are being diagnosed with celiac disease. So the guesstimate, so to speak, is that 97% of people who have celiac are undiagnosed. So that 3 million number is really, 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 really low.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I know people with celiac, it makes them crazy when people don't get tested for the sake of having more people sort of understanding not only the need for celiac friendly food, but also right. the awareness and for them to know all of these other health issues come with celiac. So the sooner you know you have celiac, the sooner you can cut off a bunch of other stuff. And I have known multiple people who have quit eating gluten because some of them couldn't get their doctor to test them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they
test is expensive and it's not covered by insurance.
Right. And so people take it in their own hands, right or wrong. I understand them. You know, like I have multiple people that I've known who have said, you're not getting me to eat gluten again. I feel better. I don't care if I have celiac. I am not going to go through the months of hell that I have to go through to eat the gluten, to have my intestines go wacky for the doctor to say you have this. And I think right. I have an empathetic and compassionate place for them because I understand the importance of testing and I think it is very important, but I can't help but say this, have somebody go, look, if you're going to have me eating gluten again to do the tests, I need short-term disability through that whole process because I can't function. And I don't think people understand sometimes how badly people don't function when they have said, I won't eat it again in my life ever.
Right. And I think there's a lot of misconception out there about celiac disease. They think it's just gluten intolerance. Mm-hmm. And just gluten intolerance is also kind of undermining the severity of the issue. I know I have a gluten intolerance. When I eat gluten, I puff up. I look like I'm 6 months pregnant for about 3 days. And it's terribly uncomfortable. I don't have celiac disease. It doesn't affect, you know, my small intestine. I still process food. I still get nutrients. I'm good. But if you have celiac disease, it's a lot more than just gluten. It is the way your body processes. It is a breakdown of the small intestine. It is a breakdown of how we absorb nutrients. And it can lead to that leaky gut where things are then leaking back out into your bloodstream. It's really, really dangerous. And people with celiac, if they ingest gluten or inhale gluten or are around gluten, they can be out of commission for like 2 weeks. And in the life of a student, especially a college student, that will break you.
Yes.
You know, you're in the workforce. You can't go to work for 2 weeks and you tell your boss, oh, you know, somebody gave me a sandwich with gluten in it. I'm out for 2 weeks. I mean, we really need to understand the impact that food has on us.
Right, right. A friend of mine, she has various intolerances, but one of them is gluten, and her kids messed with her a little bit because they kind of didn't believe that what she said was true. And so they snuck some gluten, and then she just kind of like brain fogged and weirded out, and they're like, oh, okay, you really can't eat that stuff.
Oh no. Oh my God. They probably felt so bad.
I know, right? Yeah. And she's like, oh, she's like, not cool, but okay. They get it now.
Yeah. Hopefully they learn their lesson and they don't sneak one of their classmates' peanuts.
Exactly. Right. Well, it is. Understanding that severity. Well, and let's talk about that too, because when I think of, you know, one of the things that comes up with the whole peanut allergies in schools and the kids who really either they can't, you know, they can't be around it, or there's fear around it. There's fear around food being used as a weapon to a kid with food allergies, which I completely mm-hmm. understand, you know, where moms say, well, look, peanut butter is inexpensive. How do I do this when I have to accommodate my kid for some other kid at the school?
Right. You give them bologna. I mean, actually don't give them bologna. That's poison too. But
I was going to say, really? Bologna?
Don't give them bologna. But you know, it's so interesting because people around the world think Americans are crazy to give their children peanut butter. They just think that's like the weirdest food in the whole world. So it's really cultural. It's a cultural phenomenon that we depend so much on peanut butter in this country. It really is. But there are a lot of alternatives. Again, they're not cheap. You know, cashew butter is not cheap. Almond butter is not cheap. They're just sun butter is not cheap. Mm-hmm. But there are alternatives. And you just need to see, you know, what is going to work best for your family. You know, that's really the only advice I have as far as alternatives for peanut butter sandwiches. A lot of kids live their whole life without having a peanut butter sandwich. It's completely doable. But when you have to educate the kids in the school, I think that's really important. There's a gentleman, I can't think of his name right now, Judy, but if you Google him, he goes around the country to different schools and he has little songs and skits that he does. And he is just hysterical. And it's a great way to teach children about food allergies and bullying and that kind of thing. And then somebody like AllerTrain, and they provide trainers to go in and to train the staff about, you know, food service and how to deal with kids with food allergies and that kind of things. And then you have my company where I can push in and I teach teachers how to create safe zones in the classrooms. And I talk to administrators about how to create policies and procedures. And I talk to parents about how to handle children who are coming to visit their homes who have food allergies. I don't need to talk to the parents who have food allergies because they already know what's going on. I need to talk to the ones who don't have food allergies so that they know what's going on. So there are a lot of resources out there for schools to educate the students, to educate the food service staff, to educate the teachers, and to educate the administrators, and to educate the parents, because that's where we get into a lot of trouble too in school, is when the parents don't take it seriously. The parents don't take it seriously. Their kids don't take it seriously.
Right. And so that's what you do. That is what your company does. You're going in and talking to people. It's kind of creating that environment. I mean, it's what we talk about in food allergy training. If your crew isn't taking it seriously, or the managers aren't taking it seriously, the crew doesn't take it seriously. And that can cost you your restaurant.
Yeah, it's, or, you know, it can be a lawsuit against your school. It's so serious. And like, I have to give a huge shout out to Enjoy Life and to Free Yum and to the Allergy and Asthma Network. Whenever I go into schools and I need products to show, to give to teachers that they can have in their classrooms that are safe and that every single student will love, they give them to me. They just say, here you go, Dee Dee, take this. Show the world.
Right.
And I can go in armed with great products. I bring allergen-free pizzas. I bring cookies. I bring chocolates. I bring snacks. I bring lollipops. I bring little bars, books. They have these great books for kindergartner K to two to talk about food allergies. And you give them to the teachers and like, oh my gosh. So we really can accommodate everybody, and all of the children will enjoy this food.
And it's like you have to educate sort of one grouping at a time to sort of get
them. You do. And they think they're so cute. They come in and they're like, I have a kid with food allergies and I have students with food allergies and I really already know what to do. And I'm like, that's awesome. Then you can help. You can help me answer questions as they come up. That's great. And as we start talking, it becomes very clear. They don't know. There's so much that they don't know. And then they're so happy when they leave. They're like, oh my God, I had no idea this could happen. I had no idea a child could go into anaphylaxis just from the dust of a peanut. Didn't know steam could cause a reaction. Didn't know. So once you know, then you can craft your classroom and make it safe for all of your kids.
Exactly. And it is, my understanding is that the people for whom, breathing the allergen isn't the most common thing, but boy, I know for the people who that is a thing for, it's pretty intense. They're pretty sensitive. Like I can't imagine what it's like for them to function in the world, to walk into a room where you just don't know,
Yeah. And that's the thing. You don't know. So if it ever comes in, then you don't have to worry about it. A lot of schools are going peanut free, which I think is a great step because, and you know this, and I don't know if your listeners do, but the two top offenders, so to speak, for anaphylactic reactions are peanuts and shellfish. And we don't see a lot of shellfish in schools. So that's right. Kind of an easy one, right? But peanuts we see all over the place. So if we can get peanuts out of the school, we're going to reduce our anaphylactic reactions substantially. It's a significant reduction. And then we can work on the others. But that's a really big step. And I know there are a lot of parents out there who are very frustrated that it's peanut-free school and now flights are going peanut-free. And what about my kid who has this allergy? And what about my kid who has that allergy? And what about my kid who has this one that's not in the top eight? And I get it. I get your fear. I understand. But we have to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. So at least by recognizing peanuts, we're recognizing something. And then we can move from there. And when we can't accommodate 170 food allergies, there are 170 documented food allergies in the United States. We cannot accommodate that. But we can accommodate the ones that are responsible for 90% of reactions and the ones that are responsible, the top two that are responsible for anaphylactic reactions. Mm-hmm. So it's a good step. And I think we need to be really excited about where it's going and just hope the momentum continues.
Right. Well, and if we get there and we have this basic understanding of how severe things are, when somebody does come in with a unusual allergy, people get it more quickly and they may not know how to solve it in the moment, but they know that they need to either solve it or they need to be straight up with the person and say what they can and cannot do.
Exactly right. And that's part of what we do is we give employers the tools that they need to ask the right questions so that the employee doesn't feel like they're going to lose their job, and give the employee the tools that they need to make sure that everybody understands what to do, how to react with them, how to respond to them in a way that's kind and friendly and not kind of autocratic. I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. Dictatorship, like anything like that.
Right. Sort of the roll your eyes or out of fear of, I have known of people who have gone in and said, do you have something that is gluten-free or a particular allergy-free? And they basically are like, you just can't be here. We can't deal with it. You can't be here. And don't give them any more information to say, well, wait a minute, can I tell you what I need versus,
I can't be here.
Right. Yeah. And we just don't want the liability of you in our space. And so, that comes out of fear instead of knowledge that you're like, okay, well, maybe that's the case because we are a bar that serves peanuts and there's nutshells all over the floor. So maybe that is a case for somebody who has a peanut allergy.
Exactly right.
But not so much the case of somebody who, has celiac where they just need it off of their plate and their space and that might be totally doable. So.
And there are, like, we have a great restaurant here in town in Fort Collins and it's housed in an old mill, an old flour mill.
Ooh,
there's gluten everywhere. I mean, even if they prepare gluten-free meals, there's gluten in the walls. you know, there's gluten in the air ducts. There's gluten everywhere because it was a mill. That's what it used to be. Mm-hmm. And I actually trained them in person. And the owner asked me, she goes, well, what do I do when somebody comes in with celiac or a gluten? I mean, there's gluten in the walls. I said, you tell them there's gluten in the walls.
Right.
You just put a sign out there. Hey, this is a meal. We can prepare you a gluten-free meal. We cannot assure you that you are not going to be exposed to gluten because it is everywhere.
Exactly. Wow.
It's the same. Yeah. Like people with can make you fried chicken that is gluten-free, but they can't guarantee that you're not going to be glutened because gluten is everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, you just have to be mindful of that. And as a patron, as a customer, you have to understand that's, there are some places you're not going to be able to go. Now, those are the exceptions rather than the rule. Mm-hmm. And what we'd like to do is get to the places where the rule is that, you know, you don't have just fried chicken or you don't have a restaurant housed in an old flour mill, but a grain mill, but a place where you can go and they can create a safe zone and they can create safe meals. And I think the more, as we said before, the more restaurant owners understand the impact, the positive impact that just that little step is going to take on building their business, they're going to start taking it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see that in restaurants who do it well. We see that people go there. They are their go-to places. So you are working with people, like you're working with companies, you're going out there and visiting them and working with them in person. So tell me kind of how that works. So, you know, are you kind of doing follow-up? Is this kind of creating a plan for them going forward? How do you work with people who are outside of your area? Share with that information. Cause I can imagine that people listening are like, okay, wait a minute. We need this in my space. You know,
well, I'm in the process of creating an online training module. So for people who are far away from me, I don't have to go and train your people. They can go online and it's like a little 30-minute deal about how to respond to others in the workplace. It covers, you know, the basics of food allergies, celiac disease, and food intolerances. We do talk about all of the hypotheses out there about why everything's on the rise. We talk about risk factors. We talk about the big 8 allergens. We do talk about allergic reactions and anaphylaxis in the workplace and how to deal with that. And of course, we have to talk about emergency procedures because 51% of anaphylactic reactions happen in the workplace when we're talking about adults. So it's important to know how to respond. But we also we delve deeply into employee responsibilities and employer responsibilities. And then we talk about action plans and policy. So all of that is covered. So your employees understand what's happening. It's a cute little video. I can't wait for it to be finished. We're really close. So that will be available for people who aren't close. If you are close or you want to fly me out, hey, I love to fly. I love to travel. And I can do all of that on site. We do a needs assessment. So we walk around the office space and find out what's working, what isn't working, where we can tweak things. And then I sit down and create a policy, a really sound policy, complete with procedures. And then you can pass that out to your employees and have that part of your new hire packet and your onboarding so everybody really understands what to do.
So I have a question for you. And this is born out of my own experiences. And I've always wanted to start a company where I work with people who talk to people on the phone. Mm-hmm. And teach them how to have a tone of voice that's kind and don't, you know, end the conversation. Like once you've got their money, you don't just treat them like crap or have this tone of voice that falls like, I just got to get you off the phone or, you know, say good. Yeah, all of those things. Like I've always wanted to do that. But one of the things that I'm thinking as you're talking about this is teaching or talking to employers or reminding them that customer service still plays in these situations. So for instance, I walked into a place.
I love how you're not naming the place.
I know it's so hard too. It's so hard. And I am mad at myself and I don't know if this is the best course of action, but I knew in this environment, they would have just looked at me and rolled their eyes because they know that I have advocated for food allergies for so long and they're just tired of it. So I go in and I order my gluten-free sandwich and I was excited to try this. It was a new place within a place. And so I was like, oh, it was like, oh, cool. They got gluten-free bread. I want to see this. And the girl looked at me and said, do I have to change my gloves? Like in that tone. And I was so, what I wish that I had done And I again, you could tell me course of action. And us Minnesotans, we don't want to do these things because we don't kind of cause a ruckus. But boy, I tell you, some days I'm like, I don't care. This is way bigger than me. What I wish I would have done is said, no, you don't need to change your gloves because I will ask for my money back and I will spend it elsewhere. Thank you for your time. Have a nice day. That's what I would have done.
I would have said, you know what? Absolutely not. You do not have to take your gloves off. You do not have to make a sandwich for me. I just need my money back. You have a great day. And with a smile. Exactly.
I just. I was
now, so, at that point, you just let the manager know.
Yes. And I was so upset with myself for not doing more. I was so sad because I was like, oh, come on, you guys, you know better than this. And you know, you have to not let your employees get away with that. And it was one of those things where it's like, to me, that's also right. Part of the training when I'm working with people is to, you know, look, I know this is frustrating for you and it's a shift, but remember where the other person is coming from. So it's, yeah.
I agree with you completely on, I would have handled it the same way. I would have said, no, you do not have to take off your gloves because I'm just going to go eat somewhere else. Thank you so much. Just give me my money back and toodle on my way. And then I would have called the manager and had a little conversation with them about how much I enjoyed their restaurant, how much I was looking forward to dining in their establishment and really was put off by this particular employee. And perhaps she needed a little more training because I would love to come back.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
That's what I think.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that people should feel empowered to do that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I had a very different experience. We had a Subway here in Duluth that had gluten-free bread. And I went down there and ordered a sandwich. And with the joy that it was a pleasure to go there because they were so like just respectful. And I saw them be that way with other people who were ordering. And I just thought go manager, you are doing the right thing. You are training them well.
Right. Now, whenever I travel, you know, I'm in Fort Collins, so I travel out of Denver Airport and I fly Southwest a lot. So I'm in Terminal C a lot. And a restaurant called Root Down is in that terminal. And they're incredible. They're so wonderful. Whenever you walk in, you sit down, they go to take your order. And the first thing they ask you is, do you have any allergies or intolerances that we need to be aware of? And I know some people are put off by that because they feel like that's their business and they shouldn't have to share that information. I am always thrilled. I'm like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for asking. Because now I don't have to be that customer who's requesting a special meal. It's just part of your protocol. And I feel the same way about First Watch, which is all over the country. They always ask when they come to your table. And these are restaurants that I feel really comfortable eating in because I do have a gluten intolerance and I do have issues with dairy. And I don't have to be that patron when I'm there.
Right. So it's nice. Sort of acknowledging that so many people are dealing with it. Let's just throw it on the table and, you know, and get it out there. And I know, you know, from, again, going to college where some of the students, they didn't want to disclose or they already felt awkward enough. And so they either didn't really eat as they should have, or if it became any sort of an issue, they would kind of give up. Because when it takes you 5 minutes to find out if you can eat and your friends have gone through the line, it takes some of the joy out of that. And you're young and you kind of, you know, you're like, you just want to do life.
Yeah. And people have a misconception too, that if you're eating free from or whole foods, that it doesn't taste good. Like you've removed all of the flavor from the foods, which is the furthest thing from the truth. Alternative products can be really awesome. And they're usually a whole lot better for you. Mm-hmm. So when you take your friends to the free from section of the cafeteria, so many schools now have free from zones, which is wonderful. And then other kids start eating that food too. They're like, wait a minute, this is really good. Why have I not been in this line the whole time?
No, exactly. I know people who have gluten-free versions of things that they prefer, you know, that they're like, well, no, wait a minute. That bread's actually better than the regular bread. I'm having that bread. You know, we've come a long way.
We really have. And, you know, I would love for, and maybe there are studies out there and I'm just unaware of them, but I would love someone to conduct a study or two on how we process our grains in this country compared to how grains are processed in Europe. I know so many people who have severe gluten issues. I mean, like they get hives all over their bodies if they even touch gluten. It's crazy. But they can go to Italy and they can eat pasta and they can go to France. They can eat bread and they can indulge in all of the things that they cannot have in the United States. And in Europe, it's just fine for them.
Right. I know. Isn't that
I can eat all the bread and all the pasta in the world when I'm in Europe and I have zero issues.
Wow. See, what is that? You can't argue with that. I mean, something is up, right? And I know many people would say it's glyphosate. I wonder if it's also something else as well.
They do. And they talk about fructan as well being used, that's the big culprit. So I don't know if it's glyphosate. I don't know if it's fructan. I don't know. I'm not.
Right.
That's not where I focus. But I do know, what I do know is that I and so many people that I know, and this is just, you know, research by Dee Dee Vecino sitting on her couch talking to her friends.
Right.
But they love going to Europe. The woman I was telling you about earlier, whose son had 13 diagnosed food allergies, had zero issues when he traveled.
Wow.
Only in the United States. Zero issues when he traveled. And gluten and wheat.
I remember a woman and her son, they went to France and they had decided they were going to eat something because they were in France. And they were both like, wait a minute, we're not feeling bad. And so they ate more. And then they kind of went, woohoo, we're healed. And they came back and then they ate bread and instantly they weren't healed. It was like, oh, okay, that's over. And she's like, what's going on over there? You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I love
my closest friend, she has flour imported from Italy so that when it comes time to make birthday cakes and things, she's got that flour in the house and she guards it like gold because it's really expensive.
Right.
That's what she uses.
That's so fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
I'd love to know celiac people too. Like I'm not suggesting that somebody with celiac should go eat wheat because that's just a basic problem.
Yes. To all of the listeners out there, we are not saying that just pretend.
Right?
We are saying these are personal experiences and personal stories.
Right. Well, and right. Like and I've known people with
it. I would like to see more research on it.
Exactly. Exactly. I knew a woman whose daughter has celiac, so totally knows it is not the thing she could do, but she did have some wheat while she was in Europe and she didn't get the physical symptoms, like the physical things that she could feel being sick. Mm-hmm. So yes, her intestine is still being affected,
right?
But she didn't have the gas and the sickness and being down in bed for weeks. And so again, it's why other countries will not use things with wheat flour from us.
Yeah. And that's, you know, something's up when the whole world says, no, you can't import that here. No, you can't. No, we're not taking that.
Right. Right. Exactly. We gotta figure this out, people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love a good cupcake as much as the next guy, believe me. So I really want to make sure that this gets fixed.
Well, right. Exactly. And isn't it crazy to think that if it was just a process or if it was a glyphosate or something else issue that we're just putting on the wheat or on it, that if we just took that away, it would change people's lives, you know? So the people who kind of have the, well, it's not my problem. It's like when they get annoyed with all their food sensitive friends, it's like, well, hey, if we can change this, it might not be your problem either.
Well, but it might be their problem and they might not just know it's their problem because there are so many that are undiagnosed.
That's very true.
We don't know who it's affecting because people are sick and grumpy all of the time. I mean, we have, good Lord, the high blood pressure problems in this country, the diabetes problems in this country, the high cholesterol problems in this country, the IBS in this country, the Crohn's disease in this country. We have so many diseases in this country. Mm-hmm. So many. So we are affected. If you're on blood pressure medication or cholesterol medication, you're affected. You just don't know. If you have type 2 diabetes, you're affected. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you are not having really good bowel movements, you're affected. We just tell you.
Right. Well, and
we count to the nitty gritty now.
Right. But we count it as kind of just, oh, it's just normal. It's how we operate. And people from other countries look at us and go, oh, no, that's not how you should feel. That's not how we feel, you know? And I know going to school with some people from other countries who are just, they were flabbergasted with Americans and all of the issues. And then they started eating our food and then they started having our issues and they're like, well, wait a minute, what's going on over here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a real thing that Yeah, that I love that you're doing this Facebook group, because my gosh, we need to figure this out for everybody's sake, for our old age sake, for the money we spend on sickness sake. It's so big, and I think we've just kind of gotten complacent and used to it, and it's so big that we don't know what to do with it. So I totally get it. But it's also it is a real problem. It's just it's slow for so many of us. But it's real.
It is. It's real. But we need to start a revolution. We need to rise up, and we need to start demanding that food manufacturers, and especially fast food establishments, aren't poisoning us.
Right.
I think it's reasonable to say, if I'm paying you for food, your food should not poison me.
Right.
I don't think that's unreasonable.
That's true. That is a very interesting thing. I think we have been sold the idea that that's not the case, right? And when we think about how much we in our culture have demanded, you know, don't tell me I can't have a 32 ounce cup of soda. You know, yes, I can have a 12 ounce, but that's not good enough. You have to give me my poison. But nobody's, way less people are out there saying, but give us our organic vegetables, or give us our food that doesn't have poisons on it.
Yeah, give me an option. You know, I don't want the 32 ounce soda, and I've never been a soda drinker. That has nothing to do with anything. It's just never been my preference.
Right.
Like my fiance is a huge soda drinker. I mean, he drinks more Dr. Pepper than I couldn't even begin to guess how much Dr. Pepper that man has consumed in his life. And I think the best thing about this whole 30 is zero Dr. Pepper has been consumed
right.
in the last 3.5 weeks, which has been awesome. And he feels better. So when this ends, I don't see him going back to the giant big gulps 3 or 4 times a day.
You have to do something big to sort of go, wow, this really does change my world.
It does. I mean, I sleep better. I'm waking up better. My skin is healthier. And this is just full 30. You know, this right. is just getting rid of most of the allergens, because they're not allowed on this, and getting rid of sugars. And you see such a metamorphosis in the way you feel. And you're like, oh my gosh, and I eat healthy. I'm a very healthy eater. I'm very conscientious. But even I consume things that I shouldn't be consuming. And even you, listeners, I know you're consuming things you should not be consuming. And we just need to insist that the people we're paying for food are poisoning it. Again, it just makes my brain want to explode. I'm giving you money and you're giving me poison. Mm-hmm. Why does that happen?
Right, exactly. And some of those poisons are somebody has said, well, they're good enough for you guys, you know?
Right. I won't let my child eat it, but yours is okay.
Well, that's always my question, is I want to go like interview the people who run these companies and agencies, and I want to look at their diets. Because when you have people, high level people in McDonald's who say, I would never eat that stuff. If you're dumb enough to eat that stuff, I'll take your money, but I'm not right. eating that stuff. It's like, okay, wait a minute.
Right, well, it's interesting, because if you compare it to the world of IT and artificial intelligence and all of the wonderful things that are happening in our tech world, tech giants don't allow their children to use technological devices.
Yes.
Yeah. Because they're dumbing down. So they're counting on the rest of us to dumb down our kids to increase their profits, but they're not going to let their own kids get dumbed down by all of this technology.
Right.
It's the same with food. You know, you can eat the poison. I'm not going to eat the poison, but you can eat the poison, and you can make me a lot of money eating that poison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know what? You'll make even more money if you make food that isn't poison, because people are starting to wake up and understand. So There's a lot that needs to be done, but I really do believe it has to start on the ground, and you have to get to people's pain points. And what's the pain point for an organization? Profit, bottom line, shareholders. Mm-hmm. And if you start affecting that, and you stop eating at restaurants that are poisoning you, and you start eating at restaurants that are taking your health into consideration, there's going to be a shift.
Yeah. And how do we help the greater people be able to do that and see that? And again, that's what you're doing. That's what you're trying to educate on. So here's my question. You know, when you're working with people and you're kind of working with the culture around the food allergy and helping that be just a better space for everybody, is this a topic that comes up, you know, either organically just by conversations, or part of what you also teach, or is this part of what you teach in a different realm?
this is part of the exposure. This is part of the education process. And the way I go about it is I ask people just to be really, really honest and vulnerable, and to stand up if they have food allergies, to stand up if they have food intolerances, to stand up if they have sensitivities, to stand up if they have diabetes, to stand up if they have IBS, to stand up if they have Crohn's. And pretty soon you've got about half the room standing up. And then you ask the coworkers to look at them, to stand up too, look at them in the eye. Do you want this person to be safe at work? Do you want this person to be included and not excluded at work? And nobody is going to say no to that question. And so you frame it in a different way. It's, this is what's happening. These are your people. What are you willing to do to keep them safe? And at that point, it's like anything. You know, that's the person who works the cubicle next to me. Mm-hmm. That's the person I go out and have beer with on the weekends. That's, you know, mm-hmm. So it becomes very personal, and it doesn't become the invisible man anymore.
That's
so
awesome.
That's how I deal with it.
It's about getting it real and getting to the point where people understand it is about them, you know, right. And it's about their people.
It's been an invisible disease for so long, and people don't talk about it because they don't want to be ostracized and they don't want to be looked at as that person. Mm-hmm. Because if you're in a wheelchair, you can't hide that, right? People will put in a ramp for you if you have a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. It's a disability. We have to be mindful of that. This isn't something that can be helped. You can't, you know, if you have green eyes and you want brown eyes, you can pop in different color contacts. But if you've got a food allergy, you have a food allergy. And if, as an adult, that food allergy isn't going away. Celiac isn't going away. Your food intolerances and sensitivities, you may outgrow them as a child, but as an adult, they're probably going to get worse, not better. You're not going to outgrow them. This is just the way it is. Right. And with diabetes too, we just need to change your diet. You'll be fine.
Right. Exactly. Creating that culture where people are helped with that too, because that's something that I hear. I teach pre-diabetes classes, and it's simple. Well, whenever I go to a work meeting, all there is donuts and bagels, because they're the cheapest thing for people to buy. And again, it's the long-term cost versus the short-term cost. Well, if you're feeding everybody, there was a study done about how many more calories we eat at work. Because people shared bring it, right. And it's very rarely good quality calories, right? It is everybody is happy when they have a chocolate donut in their hand. Yes, they are for 5 minutes.
And then crash and you lose productivity.
Exactly. So, and then they're stressing out because they're not feeling great, or they're frustrated because they're eating the donuts, right? And they're, you know, so it's, I see those circles of conversations in my classes. I see the, oh my gosh, I'm making all these Christmas cookies, and oh my gosh, will people quit giving me their leftover Christmas cookies? I don't want them, you know. We have to think about what all of the bigger picture means in just our daily functioning lives, but in our work. And I love the workplaces that are trying to create a healthier option, or a healthier potlucks, or healthier meeting food that really does try to kind of look at the greater good and invest in their employees well, and let their employees know that they're investing sort of in their wellness, that this isn't just a make you happy for 5 minutes. This is a bigger picture.
It is the bigger picture. And a lot, if companies who aren't doing this took a look at those that were being innovative and that were really honing in on these issues, and there are companies out there, I mean, Apple has like some incredible food service pockets within their organization at their main campus. And it's wonderful because people feel like they're being heard. They feel like they're being taken care of. And when you look at the productivity increases, once you start doing that and you really start paying attention to health and wellness in the workplace, it's what you get out of your employees is so much more. So if you're in an oppressive environment and you're not encouraging health and wellness, and I will say this, when I was at Allertrain, there were so many great things about being there. One of the great things was the snacks. We had the healthiest snacks in the world because that's what we are, right? And Nutrinfo is a health and nutrition company.
Right.
And so you walk in and you have wonderfully healthy snacks to choose from. So, and we didn't have a lot of cakes and we didn't have a lot of that. Now, if somebody's having a baby or something like that, but whenever we had potlucks, whenever we had, you know, kind of group luncheons, we were very mindful of any food issue that everybody had a safe seat at the table. And that's my goal, to make sure that everybody in corporate America, in hospital America, in K-12 education has a safe seat at the table. That's it. And it's not hard. It really really isn't.
It's about helping them know what to do, what shifts to make, and then those shifts just become norm, and then everybody's okay.
Exactly right. It is. It's a complete shift. It's, if you don't have the expertise, you need to find somebody who has the expertise that can come in and help.
Right. And I think the one thing that I would say too, because I've learned this a lot with doing training with people or the stories that I hear about restaurants who are quote unquote doing all they can to help their customers or places, that they just, a lot of times there are missing pieces. There are things that they don't know that they don't know, and that's totally fine. But to be open to what else might be possible.
Right. So especially business organizations, time. They invest a lot in people. And I feel like this is a no-brainer. I mean, this is not even something that you should have to consider whether or not to do. It's just something you need to do to protect your employees and keep them safe. And if your head of HR knew that this was out there and impossible, they would bring Aller Train in a second. They would bring me in a second. They would bring these companies in to make sure that everything is safe.
Yeah. And this is a problem that's probably, you know, this isn't changing.
No, it's a slow flow. I mean, if you look at the products that are available now in grocery stores compared to what was available 5, 7, 10 years ago, you know, I raised 2 food allergic kids. And let me tell you, there were no products. I begged my store manager at Publix to bring in Rice Dream. And he had he didn't even have the soy. Yeah, the Rice Dream and the Soy Dream. And he said, Dee Dee, there's just, because I knew him, and he says, there's not a market for it. He goes, I would have to order a case a month. And I said, I can promise you, if you order a case a month of Rice Dream, I'll buy it all. Mm-hmm. Because I was driving 45 minutes to get safe milk products for my kids. 45 minutes, an hour and a half of my day just driving. It was crazy. And then a few months later, I think more and more people must have asked him about these products because they miraculously appeared on the shelves. And oh, it was a happy, happy day. But there was nothing, you know, there the milk problem was solved, but the cheese problem wasn't solved. I still had to drive miles for fake cheese.
Right. Well, and that's the other thing too, on an advocacy level, of ask the questions, because, you know, maybe you are the fourth person to ask and they're like, okay, fine. You know, we get the message. There's people out there. Right. But, and I, again, I've known people who are like, oh, I don't want to ask. I don't want to be a bother. And so you've got the one poor vocal person who's asking and the 10 people that aren't.
You don't want to be a bother, but you'll be bothered driving 45 minutes one way to get something. So be a bother.
Right. Noise. Exactly. Yeah. And you never knew who else you're helping. And, you know, maybe they can't do it at that point. But again, if they're like, okay, well, we've had 10 people ask, we can probably do this. And then if the store, you know, makes it clear, hey, this is here, because sometimes I know what has happened. I heard of a situation where a restaurant started carrying more, I think it was gluten. I know it was gluten-free, but I think there was something else that they had a bunch of people ask and ask and ask. And they finally said, okay, fine, we'll do this. Then they did it and they didn't really advertise it. And then they got mad because nobody bought it. And when somebody kind of connected, they're like, well, nobody's coming and asking. Like, yeah, we all went somewhere else. You know, it was a location where everybody worked near this place. And so everybody else kind of went, well, we're not going to ask anymore because we don't want to bother you. You've said no.
Right.
And they're like, well, nobody's in. Like, but did you put it on the sign? Well, no, I figured you'd ask. Well, they'll put it on the sign. You know, let us know it's here. And I wonder sometimes, I think that story sounds silly to me, like the person should have figured it out. But I wonder if, you know, how often, and I think we're getting better, but I wonder if that's happened in the past too, where you don't put it out there. Because I have heard that said too, well, we don't really want to put that on our menus. And again, it's changing now, but it hasn't been that many years since I've heard some of that. Well, we don't really want to throw it on the menu that it's there. People just have to ask. There have been times when I've walked away or I've made a very particular decision because it's like, well, if it's not on the menu, then they probably don't have it. And I don't want to ask and they don't want to tell me. So I guess I'll have a salad, you know, and never gone back to the restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. So, people have to be mindful and they need to advertise. And if somebody's asking you, for every person that asks you, you've probably got 10 people who aren't.
Right. So how do we connect with you? If somebody wants to, work with you, be it your upcoming online or the in-person, or, you know, connect with you on Facebook so they can keep an eye on what you're doing.
Well, Aller Cuisine is the company. So you can find me at allercuisine.com. You can shoot me an email at dd@allercuisine.com. You can also find me on my speaker website, which is ddvicino.com. And you can send me an email at dd@ddvicino.com. I'm also on Facebook, Aller Cuisine. All you can do is look up Aller Cuisine. I'm on LinkedIn, Aller Cuisine. I'm on Twitter, which is dd_AllerCuisine. Instagram, Aller Cuisine. If you Google Aller Cuisine, you
will find you. Yeah, you're everywhere.
You'll find me. I'm not hiding, I swear. But if you are in the food industry, in the food management industry, food allergy industry, and you want to be a part of our think tank, it is Food Allergy Ambassadors, and that is on Facebook.
Wonderful.
And I would love for y'all to join, because we really are trying to build a movement so that we're not paying people to poison us.
Right. And it's so needed. If our body didn't have to constantly process, you know, the poisons, the crap, the preservatives. Preservatives do not preserve us. It is not how it works for us like it does in the food. And people would even argue in the food, it really doesn't do that either. So this is great. I'm excited that you're doing this. I'm really excited that you're doing this.
Well, it's a fun journey, and I'm excited too. And it's just an exciting time. And again, I would love nothing more than to be put out of business because we have solved this problem. Until we solve this problem, I'm here to help solve this problem. I've been doing this since the 90s because I had these two kids with food allergies. I've been doing this in the school system, and then I was doing it at Allertrain, and I'm still doing it.
Right.
So this is what I do.
And you're not doing Allertrain trainings anymore, right?
I'm not doing Allertrain trainings anymore. I would love to, but it's just time.
Yeah.
Right now.
Right. All right. Well, I'll take that over for you. No problem. I enjoy it.
You go.
I love doing allergy trainings because it's such a great time to talk to, especially people who are excited about it and want to know what they don't know. You know, I would rather train a room of two people who are excited to be trained rather than a room full of 1,000 people who don't want to be there because they think this is stupid. I want to help them understand why this is so important and why taking it seriously is so important. So I won't give up that opportunity. Trust me.
Right.
But it is, it's so much fun to hear what people didn't know or what their misconceptions were or the experiences that they had or how they were able to make somebody's day by doing the right thing and helping them out and being like, oh, you're a savior. And how much fun is that? It's so great.
It's so fun, Judy. And I think that is one of the benefits in standing up in front of a room full of 100, 200, 300 people who are skeptical.
Yes.
And then by the end, they walk out and go, holy, holy crap.
Yes.
I had no idea. I had no idea the impact that this had on people. And I had no idea my role in helping people. Right. And so when you see that shift, when you see that transformation and all of those light bulbs going off all over the room, that's an awesome feeling too. It's like, okay, yes. I get it. I get it. I get it. And I love that. I love that.
It is fun to have somebody just make the connection and be able to think about it, you know, and think about it differently instead of having to have a real life experience in their family. I mean, that's where you hear about some of the restaurants when all of a sudden a restaurant has this very allergy friendly menu and you do a little research and you find out, oh, okay, it was the owner's kid, you know, and some national chains have been that way. It's been somebody in the family has an allergy or celiac and all of a sudden they just, it ripples through everything that they do.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I am so grateful and thankful for the master trainers that are out there just spreading the word and food service at colleges, universities, in schools, restaurants, all over the place. They're wonderful. And, you know, I give a huge, huge shout out to Chef Keith Norman in Arizona, in Vegas, who is just making great strides in reaching his local community and training. And this is someone with such a passion for this. And he doesn't have a family member with food allergies. He is out there just spreading the word, writing books. He's on television. He's all over the place. And I'm like, yay, go chef, go.
Yeah. I was on a call with him, wasn't I?
I think you were.
Yes, I was. Yes. He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is amazing. He was talking about the stuff he's doing in his kitchens and it's beautiful. And that is the attitude you want because again, everybody there is excited to do it.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, I think I got some protocols from him actually.
No, he's wonderful. And his book is, he's got a really nice, easy to follow book out that shows you how to structure your kitchen. And he throws in a couple of recipes and some funny stories. And
That's fantastic.
Yeah, really nice. Really nice.
Yay. Yes.
Yeah. And if y'all are interested on that, you can Google Chef Keith Norman. His book, I've got it linked on Amazon through my website. So if you went to allercuisine.com, you can link to it from there if you can't find it.
Perfect. Well, yay. Good for you for doing the good work. And that is, it's one person, one group at a time, but good for you for doing it and seeing the need. I think so many people would agree who have food issues that what you're doing is so, so incredibly needed and more needed than people really even realize when it's not their focus. When it is your focus and your food is your focus. You know, I think of people who say, I would die if I couldn't have gluten again. Well, think about all of the people who feel that way when they literally cannot. I mean, it hurts. They know that it hurts their body, you know? So to understand that is huge.
It is. And I think the more people are willing to stand up and say they have this, that, or the other issue, the easier it's going to be for others to accommodate. Because it really, again, it isn't hard. It really isn't hard. It's just knowledge. It's just knowing what to do.
Well, thank you. This has been so fun. I love knowing what you're doing and I'm excited for the work you're doing. And thank you for spending time with me today and sharing this out to the world. Because I know there are people that are going to hear this, that need it, or their workplaces need it, or their schools need it. And again, the more we can all do to get the word out, to do the work that we are trying to do is fantastic.
Absolutely, Judy. And thank you so much for having me, because I'm always excited to be on whatever forum in whatever capacity, just to talk about this so that people know it's real. If we can build a ramp for somebody in a wheelchair, we can feed a human being food that isn't going to kill them.
Right.
Or exactly. Make them sick. Yeah. Exactly. So thank you for all of the work you do and for all of the messages you send and for all of the people you bring into your community to share the good word.
Yeah. Hey, my pleasure. It's fun.
It is. It's fun. You're fun though. We always have fun.
I will put the larger list of Dee Dee's contact information in the show notes, but you can find her at allercuisine.com. And again, if you're looking for the Facebook group for those in the industry looking to change food so that we aren't paying to be poisoned, Food Allergy Ambassadors is what you can look for on Facebook. I invite you to connect with Wellness Renaissance on Facebook. Please don't hesitate to pass around and share this episode with anybody that you think might find it helpful. And if you are a restaurant or know of one that can use some allergy training, don't hesitate to get us connected and send them my way. I absolutely love to have those conversations and do those trainings. And if we have bigger picture needs, we can get them off to Dee Dee. Take good care, have a wonderful week, and may you continue to find the pieces that fit beautifully and safely into your health and wellness puzzle. Take care.